Hi, this is Jenny Chamberlain, and welcome to my Southern Utah Housing Podcast. This season, we're talking about attainable housing. And I'm really excited today because I'm interviewing Toni Foran, and she used to be the city planner. Is that right, Toni?
That is correct.
At Hurricane City. And she worked, how long did you work there?
Well, I started work in 2002.
Okay.
But I became the planner, whatever, probably zoning administrator in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
I actually started full-time in 2002. I started in 1999, and I always remember that because we had the big Y2K thing, and I had to work until midnight to make sure nothing fell apart.
Wow. Wow, that's fun. So you were at the city for a long time. So
yeah. And before that, I actually worked for Tocqueville City. Since probably, let me think, from 1988
mm-hmm.
until I went to Hurricane City. I worked, in fact, for the first 2 years, I worked for both.
Wow. So that's a lot of years of experience in municipal government.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's great. I'm really excited to have you here. I know you have a wealth of knowledge and experience. So So we'll jump right into it. So one of the reasons I wanted to interview Toni is because when she was still the city planner, when I started in my real estate journey, I've just been interested in attainable housing ever since that time. So I tried to get with you to ask questions and talk about it, but we never quite totally connected about it. And then anyway, I've just kind of been in and out. But I know you have a lot of expertise on it, so I'm really excited to hear your thoughts today. So is there anything you want to start with talking about, or want to jump into questions?
Well, first is that term, attainable housing.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of research to find definitions. It's not a term we ever used.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about affordable housing. We talked about multifamily housing. I haven't been able to find a consensus on what attainable means.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's being used because there's a stigma to the term affordable housing.
It is.
People immediately think, you know, tenements,
projects
mm-hmm. whatever, even though we've never really had tenements and projects in Southern Utah, but the history is there in our psyche, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I know it comes from St. George City because of that exact reason.
They adopted the word attainable
to help people understand this is for us here who work here, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, the one definition I saw was 50 to 200% of the median gross income.
That's for attainable?
Attainable. Affordable generally goes from 30 to 80%.
Okay.
So if, you know, if you're talking about school teachers, that kind of thing, the statistics I've seen show that the Washington County median income is $65,040 a year,
which is
like a $1,600 a month payment.
Yeah, last year it was in the 80s. It was in the low 80,000s.
Has it gone
our median
up? Okay.
With inflation, it has risen. But yeah, it's definitely below what the median house prices are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I haven't looked. I don't even want to look now with mortgage rates where they are. But anyway.
It's a little hairy.
Yeah, so it is. But there were a lot of fun things that I got to do as far as, you know, helping people get into housing. I administered the Home to Hurricane Down Payment Assistance Program, and we helped families get into homes with the rural housing. And some of the things we did with zoning were just little tweaks, but they did help with the building of, like, multifamily construction. We eliminated unit frontage and backloaded parking requirements. We created an accessory dwelling unit standard, which is the first time we've allowed accessory dwelling units, but I think its purpose was defeated within the first year when it became allowable to use those for
short-term
vacation
rentals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Short-term rentals have had a huge impact.
Mm-hmm.
We also were able to protect the residential rights of those people that lived downtown and had commercial property, and we were kind of holding them in limbo. They couldn't add on because that was an expansion of a non-conforming use. So we were able to say, no, we're not going to change the zoning, but as long as it's a residential use, you're going to have all the rights of any other residential owner.
Mm-hmm.
And that has really helped. And I've noticed that the city has also added some multifamily housing rights to that general commercial area down there, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
When I started with the city couple of years after we started, we got a $75,000 grant to help with affordable housing. Well, our plan at that time was to buy and rehabilitate houses. Well, we bought one house, and then you couldn't buy a house for $75,000 after that. Yeah, I believe that. And so it ended up being used to help cover impact fees for projects for like Habitat for Humanity houses and things like that.
Oh, that's great.
So that worked. And I also, you know, little things like agreements, the Lone Rock Condominiums Project, which is for FHA financing. I helped get that, the agreement written and everything there. So that was helpful. I checked this morning and there's still units available for $225,000, which as a person that's been a homeowner for a long time, that's a really scary amount of money to pay for a house. But
yeah. Where are the Lone Rock ones? Are they up by the Walmart distribution center?
They are. Yeah. Oh, okay. They're up by Knollwood Townhomes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Walmart, they do back up, some of them back up on the Walmart distribution center.
So if somebody, do you have to like qualify to be able to buy those? Or are they just on the market at that price?
I don't know how the financing works. I kind of just looked at it and they talked about, you know, get in touch with us for how the FHA housing works. But we did require them to not open it up to just rental, you know, to require a certain percentage to be home ownership.
Yeah.
So that people that live here and are really looking for a home can afford, can buy them, you know, and not just get priced out by investors. And so and that was something that I felt was kind of one of the last things I was able to do. One thing that's always really, I don't know, every public hearing about a multifamily project ends up being this them versus us.
Yeah.
As though because I live in a townhome or an apartment or a, you know, a triplex, there's something less worthy about me.
And or other about you.
And it was always very, very, I don't know, it just made me doubt
your faith in humanity.
My faith in humanity, because it was just,
I struggled with that too.
There was one hearing that, oh my gosh, it was just awful. I mean, every hearing we expected to hear, it's going to deflate my property values. It's going to cause more traffic. It's going to cause yada, yada. But, I mean, that was always, it was always going to cause more traffic. It was going to cause more crime. And it was going to cause, you know, bad people to move into my neighborhood. And yet, I mean, look around. Across the street from you, the people on the corner are living in a duplex. Can you believe that? Two dwelling units in one house. Isn't that awful? And so that's kind of a thing that we've tried to, you know, when I first came to the city, we had an ordinance that you had to build a 6-foot wall around a multifamily housing development. It was like, you got to keep those people away from everybody else. It took years to get rid of that.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
You know, so, it's very interesting.
Yeah, what's hard for me about it too is that it's not other people, it's our children and like most people at some point in their life live in an apartment or a smaller place. And when I was younger and was trying to find a place like that, there just weren't any around here. Like they're just, a lot of the multifamily in our city that's been built has been after I was at the age at which I needed it.
Yeah. No, they aren't there. I mean, there's a lot more options now than there were. Unfortunately, they cost a lot. But I mean, renting isn't even affordable now.
Yeah.
But I think there are some things that people can do. Anyway, I don't know if you have more questions for me before I jump on my hobby horses.
Well, what are the things that people can do is what I'd really want to know. You know, what factors influence attainable housing from the city perspective?
It's really hard. I mean, attainable housing, affordable housing, housing that ordinary working people can afford is really a hard job because the city doesn't control the price of land. The city doesn't control the highest impact fees. And so as far as from a city standpoint, the only thing they can do is try to help it make it easier for private developers to develop the land in the mm-hmm. most cost-effective way and yeah. to encourage that. There's a popular movement in planning called, you know, the missing middle housing.
Yeah.
And a
yeah.
lot of what they do is they go, you go through a neighborhood and you look at the existing, mm-hmm. you know, look at the old downtowns and stuff. It's not all single family houses on big lots.
Yeah.
I mean, you go through any town, even Hurricane, even Tocqueville, you're going to find multifamily units mixed in with the single family.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find little apartment buildings. They're not huge. They're not like, you know, I can't remember the name of the ones down there by the golf course. They're not mm-hmm. those big, giant, huge things, but 6 to 8 unit apartment buildings in the middle yeah. of a neighborhood or 10 little townhomes tucked in on a lot. And I doubt very much they have changed the property values, the kind of living, you know. I think the most important thing cities can do is to plan for how they want their community to work and function and mm-hmm. make sure that there's accessibility to green space so that people that live in multifamily housing aren't, you know, disadvantaged by not having somewhere for their kids to play.
Yeah.
Making sure that things that affect quality of life, lighting, sidewalks, those kind of things are available.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that the communities that are built watch those things. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of towns I saw where there some places are adopting just a neighborhood district.
Mm-hmm.
And it really just, it says, you know, this is how much house you can put on a piece of property. But we don't care what that is. That could be 8, 10 one-bedroom apartments. That could be one big McMansion. That can mm-hmm. be, you know, 7 duplexes, whatever you can fit on that property and meet our other requirements. Some places have gotten rid of parking requirements. I think some parking requirements are onerous, like, you know, one parking space per bedroom kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. I think it depends on the use of
yeah.
of whether those make sense. Because sometimes when you see, we're starting to see so many people use their space as vacation rentals. And then you do end up with parking problems that
oh, yeah.
would make more yeah. sense. But for individual single residences, oftentimes you need those bedrooms for kids who aren't even driving yet.
Yeah.
And they don't need
it. Well, and can, you know, it's like, I don't think the statistic is accurate here in Southern Utah, but
mm-hmm.
in a lot of places, there's only one person living in a house. It doesn't matter how many bedrooms are in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. now us baby boomers are going to die one of these days, and maybe there'll be some more people in those houses. But transit is an issue. You know, you can say in Salt Lake City you don't need any parking spaces.
I was going to ask
they
you
have an
that.
Amazing they have an amazing transit system.
Yeah,
you know, where you don't have to. I have a son, I have a friend, I have other people that's what they depend on.
Mm-hmm.
To go to school, to go to work, to go out to dinner, whatever, you know, and they can.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's not suitable.
It's not available
here.
The
Hurricane Valley and St. George area.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about SunTrans.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it's, you know, adequate. I know that there are people that public transit doesn't work for no matter where you are.
Yeah.
Even in Salt Lake, my daughter-in-law would have to spend an hour and a half getting to work.
Mm-hmm.
The way the routes work and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's
so,
totally impractical.
Yeah. And so, you know, you can't dedicate that much of your time to mm-hmm. riding on buses and waiting for buses.
Yeah.
But it's all tied together. And the other thing that is the giant in the room is water.
Yeah, for our county, for sure.
For our county, well, for all of Utah. All of the West.
Yeah.
Are we going to keep hiding our heads in the sand and make water more and more expensive, but that doesn't make more water available?
Mm-hmm.
The cost of water is a huge factor into the cost of housing.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
So that when you mentioned earlier, like higher impact fees that the city doesn't control, that's water is one of those in our county, right? Because the Water
yeah.
Conservancy District is a county organization.
Exactly.
And so they're the same across the board, regardless of city.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there's other impact fees still have to pay what they have to pay. I mean,
yeah.
You have to pay for your own water tanks and your own water system within your project. Like, for instance, and this wasn't an impact fee project, but Dixie Springs, the whole water system had to be replaced because it was defective.
Hmm. For the whole neighborhood?
Oh, the entire project.
Development? Wow.
Or at least 2/3 of it.
Wow.
You know, and that there's no, you know, that should have been a something that got done over 50 years, not having to be redone.
Yeah.
But it was a learning process, and the Water Conservancy District, I think, helped with that because they had helped put it in. But anyway,
yeah,
there's just things like that that come up that, you know, cities have to eat.
Yeah.
And so it's hard. But I mean, from a strong towns, which is a movement standpoint, multifamily housing is the only housing that actually pays its own way. Because everybody says, well, I pay my property taxes. How come there's holes in my street or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to pay enough property taxes to
keep your street.
The town of Tokerville, even to keep up your street. Not to mention all the other services they're going to provide to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's a real challenge. As cities, you don't want to zone everything for used car lots because those make really good money. You want people to live there.
Yeah. And so when you say multifamily housing pays its own way, is that because?
Well, I'm not sure that it pays its own way, but
more population brings in more tax revenue at your businesses, and the more it's a people, less impact.
The more people you have in a shorter frontage of public services, you know, a shorter length of pipe, a shorter piece of power line, whatever.
The more efficient, cost efficient.
So you're not building, you know, 3 miles of new road to service 8 new houses. You're building no new road because you just turned that big house in the middle of town into a duplex or a fourplex.
A missing middle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A missing middle. And part of the way to do that is because public hearings make people defensive.
Yeah.
Because usually it's this is what we want to do. What's your reaction? Instead of, what do you think we could do to solve this problem?
I've been seeing that because I just volunteered for the Planning Commission in my town. And I feel like very, very often we get caught in a trap where everybody in their own minds is framing it as this is an adversarial relationship, when actually we're all members of the same community. We all stand to benefit from a well-planned and well-organized community. So really, we're in a creative, collaborative alliance. I learned this from a very wise woman. We're really just trying to create something together. And we should be able to, like, we should, instead of treating it as we're going to see what we can get in a power struggle, we should look like we just need to think about creative solutions, try to think outside the box.
Yeah. Anyway,
I've been thinking about that a lot lately.
And one of the things I wish we had done, and I think every community needs, is little neighborhood councils that have talked about long-term planning and what's acceptable to them and what isn't long before a proposal ever shows up, you know, so that the planning commissioners know what's of value to people in those neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Before they all of a sudden say, wait a minute, we didn't know anybody was thinking about doing this.
Yeah. It's funny to me because like Tokerville just did its survey to update. And as I was reading the survey, some of the questions were worded in such a way that we could say yes, yes, yes to all of them, but we were saying yes to things that were in direct competition with each other.
Yeah, no.
You know, we really want the open space, but we're okay with half. I can't even remember what they were, but it was situations
I remember
where
the
I was
same
like,
reaction.
You can't say yes to both of these because you can have this or you can have that, but you cannot have both of these things. So yeah, we'll write a list of we want everything. We want the bypass road so people won't come through town, but we're going to let the developer pay for half of it and then we'll tell them they can't do anything. Like there's just all this sort of we don't always connect the dots when we are thinking about what we
want. That's what planning should do.
Is not connect the dots, right?
Yeah, is connect the dots and identify the dots.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be bogged down in whether you want to put even just to add a little mother-in-law apartment onto your house.
Yeah.
It should just be a matter of you go look at the building permit and you say, okay, you're adding this many square feet and you've met the egress requirements and looks like your lot's big enough to do this and okay.
Yeah, and I think the state actually just did that. That if an accessory dwelling unit is within the footprint of the existing home, like above a garage or wherever, I think it's legal. Like across the board now, just because it's one of the best practices.
Yeah. So. Yeah, a lot of states are making that. I didn't know whether Utah had or not.
I think just last year. I need to read the law. I keep talking about it and thinking about it because I just heard it from somebody, but I need to go.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to see if I can find it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy about it.
Yeah. One of the things that I thought they did that was really awesome, and I know that's a really touchy thing because we as towns don't like the state telling us what to do in our communities. And the state doesn't always know what's best for our communities. You know, I would hate to have them tell Rockville, sorry, you have to allow all commercial uses.
Yeah.
That's not what Rockville wants for itself.
Right.
You know, not to mention they don't have enough water. But anyway, I know because I've been in emergency planning meetings about that. Mm-hmm. But it's a real fine line. But one of the things they did while I was working was they required the definition of family was dictated by the state. And it had to include up to 5 unrelated individuals if you were not a college town. If you were a college town, I think it had to be more.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for people that way, you know. Mm-hmm. But the city housing definition, let's see, I think I printed it out.
So when they were defining family, like in what context? In a housing context?
In a housing like context, a like this is a dwelling unit for a single family.
Okay.
So what does a single family mean? I mean that's how nitpicky we get in planning. And so if you expand that definition, then you expand housing opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, generally it has to do with people being related to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But the definition of a family, I think I left it at home, but you know, it's like 2 people related by marriage, adoption, or some other legal thing. Mm-hmm. In Hurricane, it was 1 or 2 unrelated individuals and their children, or, you know, 2 people related and their unrelated children. Anyway, and then up to 5 unrelated individuals. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that helps. That's another option, you know, co-housing, where I have 5 friends that I get along with, and whether we're a group of 70-year-old women or we're a group of, you know, 20-year-old guys. Can we legally live in a single family home? We're not a family.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so too. And somebody pointed out to me that they lived in a really nicer neighborhood where all of the homes were larger 4 and 5 bedroom homes. And he said, we have a home in our neighborhood that has 3 families living in it. And so if you crunch down too much on like multifamily homes, then the larger homes just by default become multifamily homes because that's all people can afford.
Well, and actually,
let's get together. And
I mean, if you think about it, I mean, I guess by definition, they're still family, but how many families are living with other family members?
Yeah. Yeah, multi-generational a lot of times.
Yeah.
Or siblings. I lived in my sister's house for a while we were between houses.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just, there's so many housing options that those are a familiar relationship, but do they have to be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, does it matter if I live in your basement for, you know, for 2 years? Well, I can look around and look around and look around. I can't find anything I can afford.
Till I give up.
Yeah, exactly. Till I go move to somewhere else that I can afford. But those places are becoming few and far between.
Yeah.
I mean, I've traveled a lot. And when I travel, I look at real estate prices and houses and stuff. And it's a problem everywhere. It's not unique to us.
So we've already talked a little bit about this, but what can planners and city councils do to influence? Like, do they have influence on the problems? Is there, are there things that they can do? You know, I know it's important for city councils to listen to the public clamor, but I also think sometimes they may have more knowledge or experience from...
Well, yeah, most of the time,
perspective.
People don't, they can't see the big picture because they haven't been living it day to day like the people that are in the government or even like you on the planning commission. You know what the rules are and your hands are tied by those rules.
Yeah.
You know, it was like years ago, the state legislature mandated we have a public hearing for subdivisions. And I'm like, oh, great. We have everybody around this subdivision come in and tell us why we shouldn't let us do it.
Every single time.
But we don't have a choice. It meets the zoning. It meets the subdivision standards. We can't say no. So what are we getting everybody all upset about? What was the point?
That's a good point. Do you have to notice about it or just have the hearing?
Oh, like, no. I think you are.
Do you have to notice, like, mail out to people on that?
Oh, it it used to be a certain number of
feet
around, you know, that you had to mail notice to property owners. I actually haven't studied the notice regulations in a while, but
I was just curious.
There's reasons. I think one of the things that cities can do is create a really good general plan.
Mm-hmm.
Not one based on these questions that you only can answer yes or no or are leading you in one direction or another, but based on really good, you know, input, neighborhood meetings, those kind of things. Adopt a good general plan that really has a vision for your future, that thinks about what people need, you know, and thinks about how much business do I really need? I mean, like commercial square footage per 1,000 people has been dropping and is going to continue to drop just because of the way we do business.
Yeah, we're buying stuff online all the time.
Yeah, and and you know, and stores are not stocking as much because it costs too much to stock it. I mean, there's so many different dynamics going on. So think about all that stuff, you know. Can we create a mechanism to transform commercial into residential? There's communities that are transforming hotels into affordable housing. Now, if that's going to happen in southern Utah, I don't think so. Because
it already has. Switchpoint has one.
Yeah. Have they? Did they get one? Do. Yeah. And I think it depends on, you know, like the age of the hotel, that kind of stuff. It becomes undesirable for the market.
Yeah.
And so you change it. But yeah, organizations like Switchpoint are amazing. And towns can choose to help fund things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do have the purse strings. I know it's always stretched, but they do have those options. But the thing I would love to see more towns in Utah do is general plans are advisory.
Mm-hmm.
There are communities that require zoning to match the general plan. You can't come in and ask for a zone change or a land use change. Now, I think zoning needs to be relaxed quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think it still has a role, but I think it's become too much of a role. I think there's things you can do. The original purpose of zoning was to protect, you know, safety, make sure you had fire safety, that you had access to clean water, that you had air. I mean,
yeah.
There were buildings that didn't have even a shaft for ventilation, you know.
Oh, wow.
And that you were protected from living next to an industrial park or a feedlot or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think those kinds of purposes we need to go back to and maybe not focus so much on trying to keep all the uses separated. I mean, just walk around our block here in Tokerville, Jenny. We have a duplex. We have the town hall.
Mm-hmm.
We have single family homes. We have a boot repair man.
Yeah, we have vacation.
We have
rentals,
vacation rentals.
All of it.
Yeah. We have guest houses. We have duplexes.
Mm-hmm.
And it all works.
Yeah.
You know, is it going to hurt? I mean, it's like the ice cream shop in the garage or like the little olive oil place in Hurricane
yeah.
that used to be a a hairdresser. And it's still a residence, but it always had a separate little building that was commercial. It actually makes the neighborhood richer. It doesn't hurt the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's funny. I was, one of my coworkers is a real estate investor. And so in his home, he does residential hosting. And I was shaming him about it because I was like, well, you know, that should be used for an attainable house. You should rent it long term because blah, blah, blah. And he said, this is making my housing affordable for me. And I was like, oh, I didn't even ever think of that. Like, well, it's getting so expensive here that many people do have to rent out some of their space. And short-term is more
lucrative. Well, short-term is more lucrative.
I just felt bad.
It's more lucrative, but man, I would rather have the people that are renting for me wash their own sheets.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought of it. I like that.
I mean, it's like short-term housing has its costs, too.
Yeah.
Somebody has to clean up after them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I did a stint as a maid.
Mm-hmm.
I can hardly keep up when my family comes to visit. I don't want to do all that laundry.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I just think, you know, as far as the state, I tried to find out how much they have funded the Olene Walker Housing Trust Fund. And I can't find anything but guidelines from 2021.
I've been curious if they're making some changes to it, too, because I was doing a little bit of research while I was in my master's program about it, and all I could find was that it was used up for whatever year we were looking at it. And I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go this year.
But I mean, funding those kinds of programs that are established, have guidelines, those kind of things, I think that's really helpful.
Okay.
And an idea I just came up with this morning that is probably totally off the wall, but you know, we have state trust lands.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, state trust lands are always sold to the highest bidder or the project they like the most. What if some of that state trust land was treated as a land trust where housing was developed on it that was affordable rental housing, but the proceeds for that rental housing went into the school trust fund indefinitely? So instead of you making the money from one sale of the land, it's providing affordable housing and it's continuously contributing to the trust fund.
I love that idea, and I'm really curious what they are doing already, because I know they are doing some types of investments stuff with the CITLA fund. But I do. I also know in St. George, I've learned this from being on the Housing Action Coalition, that there is a group called the Community Trust Land Group, and they are working on finding land in which they will build attainable housing and people can buy just the house. And then it includes like a 99-year lease, so they can live in it as long as they want. And then they can, if they eventually want to sell, they can sell that home. But whoever buys it will also only be buying the home and get a new 99-year lease. So that way you can keep some attainable housing in the market.
Keep the cost of the land off the
table. The house, so that's the big cost.
Yeah. If they can find land to do that, that is a model that works.
And I think that's the big question, because we're classified as a difficult to develop county because the price of land here is so high.
It is. I mean, there's so many things that go into what makes a house affordable. I mean, cost and availability of materials, cost of land, whether it already has a road to it or not, you know, development costs like that.
Yeah. And
there's
land is always
so many things.
The number one expense.
Yeah. And number one is the land. Yeah. I mean, I know people screaming and hollered about impact fees, but by the time you've paid for the land, I mean, $250,000 for a half acre, that makes it really,
it's pretty unaffordable.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I've wrestled with this for so long, trying to figure out what is the solution. And when the people that put together affordable housing projects with a little piece of money here and a little piece of money there, and they found this piece of land here, I'm in such awe of them, because it is an incredibly difficult process.
Yeah.
And then you've only created housing for, you know, like 8 to 10 people, maybe. Yeah. How do you choose those people?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I interviewed the executive director for Habitat for Humanity, and she was talking about the process, and I just thought, that is so hard, because you probably see all these families who need it so badly and would benefit so much, and you just have to pick one.
Yeah.
Because they only build one. They only build one house a year,
and
that's a drop in the bucket of the need.
Oh, yeah.
Around here.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the, I mean, you probably know better than I do because you're on that committee, but, you know, I don't know what the affordable units deficit is, but it has to be huge.
It's huge. I we're just probably over 1,000 short. And one of the things is a lot of times you'll look and, okay, this is what the median income can afford. And you look on the MLS, and for 2020 and 2021, there was quite a long period of time in which there were zero homes in that price range on the MLS. And I think, I'm hoping we're going to come back there, but there's no guarantee that we will, because we do live in such a desirable place that we're seeing a lot of net in-migration, and many people are willing to pay higher prices for the homes. And I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens over the next year or two if we still have this little slow trickle recession that, you know, it's hard to know what's going to happen.
It is hard to know, because, I mean, I've told some people, I've been like, well, if you want to sell your house, probably sell it now. But if you're looking to buy, wait a few months and see what happens.
Yeah. Right now, it's like I wish I had a crystal ball, and I don't.
Oh, God. Always.
Yeah.
Always. That's the tool that we all wish we had, because it would be so much easier. But I just think, as we're building affordable housing, as we're building housing, the cities really need to focus on making sure that they're not losing sight of providing the things that cities do, providing the safe drinking water, the green space. Mm-hmm. Hurricane City is recording plats with a note on it that says, we don't guarantee you're going to get water to serve this property. Well, am I going to read that note on the plat when I buy a lot? No. I would. But
yeah, many people would not.
You know, it's like I look at the flood maps when I buy property too. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't just assume that the trickling stream in the back is a nice amenity.
Yeah.
But 90% of people won't.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is a huge risk.
It is a huge risk. I'm surprised that they would do that.
The language is really technical.
Yeah.
And it's hard to understand, because it says Hurricane City operates a municipal culinary water system with limited water supply. Approval of a plat does not guarantee sufficient water will be available to serve lots depicted on any plat. Any land use applicant may be required to provide a guarantee of water availability. If there's any approval without a water guarantee, the applicant assumes the entire risk of water availability.
That makes me think of, somebody was just telling me about a city, I can't remember if it was in Arizona or Nevada. Was it Arizona where they did that? And now they're out of water for those houses, and the houses are having to get trucks to bring their water to them.
Yeah, it's outside of Scottsdale, Arizona.
What were they thinking? What was the city thinking? I don't know.
Well, the city didn't do it. The city told them, okay, we will supply water to this area, but we reserve the right to cut it off. And the city sent letters to the homeowners telling them this was the facts, and people still bought there.
People still bought.
But I would bet you that they just never, I mean, like the one gal I heard him talking to, she was like, my water costs me as much as my mortgage.
Wow.
Well, if you're already spending 40% of your income on water, and then you spend 40% on your mortgage, which cost burden to that point, you know. Wow. The other thing I think that's really important that we don't do is we don't look at the cost of the housing. Shadow Ridge was built as a affordable housing area.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I wish you wouldn't build affordable housing areas where everybody has to own two cars to get to work and get to the store or to school, because they're way out in the middle of nowhere.
And it's less affordable.
It's way less affordable when you have to pay for two cars and all that mm-hmm. stuff. But on top of that, they ended up with highly inefficient heating and cooling units. Mm. I wouldn't, if the state wanted to mandate that if you're building, housing has to have efficient heating and cooling. It's to all of our benefit as communities.
Yeah.
To not use more power. Water generates power. We don't have water. I mean, that's all a huge conundrum that goes together. And mm-hmm. it's a huge benefit that we noticed immediately that those people had some of the highest utility bills in the city.
Wow.
I don't know if, you know, how much of that's changed since then, but it's just little things like that that really start to add up for making stuff affordable. That those are all little tweaks that can be done through, you know, the state mandates building codes. Well, that's a piece of the code they can decide to put in there if they want to.
I never would have thought of that. Interesting. I think that we have talked about most of the questions that I had. Like, we've just kind of got through, and we touched a little bit on transit oriented development. Did Hurricane ever do anything that was like that while you were working there? Now you're retired, right?
I am retired. Yeah, okay. I retired in July of 2020.
Okay.
I got to spend my first year of retirement at home being safe until they developed the vaccine. But anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, actually I didn't. I traveled. Mm-hmm. But there was a study that was going to bring transit from St. George to Springdale with stops in Hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
One of the stops that we really fought for was at Purgatory, because mm-hmm. people are released from Purgatory with no way to get anywhere
mm-hmm.
and are always walking along the highway. And all of the probation officers were stationed at Purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to get back to Purgatory to check in. But anyway, and we had downtown, and I think there was one in Leverkin, and there was one out by the Walmart distribution center.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great housing
place. But I don't know what happened. I don't know where, you know, whether, I mean, you don't have funding, but I haven't heard anything about it in a while.
So I am with a ladies group that we do a lot of hiking outside. One of my friends said that they have been working on like walking trails and biking trails for that whole,
well, yeah,
like, from St. George
to Zion. I participated in that study.
I wonder if some
study,
of that money got...
I don't think so. I mean, because we were pursuing... There was a group of us pursuing grants for that as well, and we went and walked some alignments and talked about trailheads and debated whether e-bikes could be on them or not, all those kinds of things. But that's usually different pots of money than transit. And they had money set aside, but I really don't know what happened.
Yeah, that's a good question. Something to look into.
Yeah, yeah. You could just probably call Darren Lefevre or Arthur and LeBaron. Either one of them can probably tell you what's going on.
Yeah, that's a good thought. Maybe I'll have to look one of those two up and see.
Yeah, but we could, you know, we could consider locations of housing in relation to schools and and stores and stuff, and maybe create parking requirements just for those kind, you know, according to those distances.
Yeah, I serve on the community council for our elementary school, and we just last year were having to lobby for a new crossing walk, because there was this spot where there are two streets that come out by our school, and there's a crossing guard on one, and then there wasn't anybody or anything on the other one. But kids were just crossing all the time, right where parents were double and triple parking, because it was time to drop off kids and it was super dangerous. And they did finally put in a blinking crosswalk. So I'm really happy they did that. But how people get to those high density, like activity places like schools and things, it makes a big difference. And there is a lot of that affordable housing going in right by that school too. And so the traffic had significantly increased.
Yes, it always amazes me is how far away willing to let our kids walk to school. I mean, obviously, if you live in Tocqueville, your kids are not going to walk to school. But if you live two blocks away,
yeah, they're walking for sure. My son has walked to school at the middle school before from Tocqueville.
Yeah.
But he has to get up at 5:30 in the morning if he's going to do that, because it's 6 miles.
Well, my
son. But that's not practical for every day.
No,
he just does it.
You don't
for
do
fun.
It every day. Yeah. My kids rode their bikes once in a while, but it is a long. And I don't like the road. You know, that
I don't either.
Down,
I wish we
down
had a
there
walking
by
trail,
the cemetery, the that's curb. Scary as heck.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's really all I wanted, unless you have anything else you want to cover
God,
in our discussion.
No, you don't want to keep me just talking and talking.
No, I love hearing people have experience and insight. So thanks for bringing those today.
Oh, thank you so much for asking me. You gave my brain a workout and I needed it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for listening to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. I hope you'll think about subscribing and give the podcast a review. If you found it valuable, if you have feedback or ideas to make this podcast better, check out my website, jennychamberlain.com, and leave me a message there.